Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, November the 28th. So far, 17 Republican House of Representative members and 6 Republican U.S. senators have announced they are retiring or not running for re-election. The most recent of the two on the list, Senate Minority Whip Trent Lott, who announced on Monday he's retiring, and Illinois Republican Congressman Dennis Hastert, the former House Speaker. On Monday night, he surprised people when he said he was leaving the Capitol Hill immediately, though we knew in August that he would not be running for re-election. We'll talk about these most recent decisions by Republicans to leave Congress, and we will look at the broader picture, too. Why the mass exodus? Is this unusual? And what, if anything, does it say about the 2008 elections? Will Republicans lose more seats in Congress next fall? And are you concerned or pleased over all of this? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. We welcome your call with your question or view. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Chap Rackaway, an assistant professor of political science at Fort Hays University in Kansas. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Glad to be back.
Yes, thanks for being with us again.
So let's
talk about
pleasure.
Yeah, let's talk about the little picture first. We knew Dennis Hastert was not going to run for re-election. He said that in August, but this resignation effective immediately the other day caught some people by surprise. What's up with this?
Well, there's been a lot of blog buzz about Hastert's acceleration of his exit, and there's any number of wacky conspiracy theories and some ideas just straight out of left field. The way that it actually looks is that Hastert, in a combination of being tired of being in the minority and not seeing very much effectiveness from his time there, has just decided that it's time to bow out, and there held a special election to replace him where a member of his party has the best opportunity to succeed him. So a lot of this is Hastert strategically moving on so that he can be replaced by a Republican, so that a fast starting Democrat will have a little bit of a disadvantage. His name is Bill Foster, who has already raised $541,000 to run for this seat, will not have as many of the advantages as his Republican opponents, Chris Lawson and Jim Oberweis, and Oberweis ran for the Illinois Senate a couple of years ago against Barack Obama. So the whole idea there is Hastert trying to keep the seat in the family, I guess you could say.
Right. He's maybe doing this for the good of the party.
He has taken one for the team.
Yeah. And there's going to be then a special election or a primary in February for those two Republicans.
That's right. Yeah. And Oberweis has the big name rec advantage since he ran statewide 2 years ago. But Lawson has a $100,000 advantage in him over him in fundraising so far. So that that makes for a sizable step forward that Lawson has over Oberweis.
Yeah. Does this mean they still have to run in the fall? Is that the special election is just the primary, and then there will be a Democrat versus a Republican in the fall, or what?
Oh, yeah. Whoever wins is going to have to face Foster. But what happens is these primaries are always contentious affairs. There's the old quote from Ronald Reagan when he was running in the Republican primary in 1980, and he said, "Republicans should never speak ill of another Republican." But when it comes down to a primary, every member of one party takes shots at members of their own party. What happens is whoever wins one of those contentious primaries then has all of these negatives, basically free opposition research, done by their own party members for the opposing party to use against them. So you spend your money down, you've had all these attacks against you, it just seriously weakens any party's nominee. It's sort of like going through a big fight, and then you've got to turn around and immediately start training for the next fight the next day. And you're tired, you're spent, you don't have energy, and now you've got to start fighting and punching all over again. It just puts you in a terrible disadvantage these days to have a primary fight like that.
I get it. I was just confused because our partisan primaries for Congress are in September, not in February.
Mm-hmm. That's sort of the other after effect of the presidential nominating system. You want to talk about something that is sort of ugly for American democracy, and I don't want to get off too much on a tangent here, but I do have to get up on the soapbox for a moment. We've had all these front-loaded presidential primaries, and in the rush to move them forward, we've kept our primary dates the same at the state level how they were. Kansas's, I believe, isn't until June, despite the fact that we've moved our caucus up until February, mm-hmm. and Wisconsin has that same thing. So you still have this staggered election calendar for sub-presidential elections, but what that means is that these candidates are running in primaries where people aren't paying nearly as much attention because, oh, we've already had the presidential primary. What do you mean there's another election coming up in a month and a half? And you know, we have enough of a hard time getting our voters to pay attention to politics in the first place, let alone adding this new wrinkle that disengages people even further. It's a really unfortunate thing.
We're going to check weather, and then we'll continue talking with our political analyst this hour, Chap Rackaway from Fort Hays State University, about the recent wave of GOP Congress members announcing their resignations. The latest two out of 23 coming this week, Trent Lott saying he's not going to run again, and Dennis Hastert, who we knew wouldn't run again, but he announced he's leaving Congress immediately. So the governor can call a special election in February for his seat. What does this wave of resignations say, if anything, about the state and future of the Republican Party? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 and a half minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, November the 28th. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. After 5, Ben's guest says our electronic waste, such as cell phones and computers, end up in other countries like China, India, and Nigeria, and that's polluting their environment. Talking about e-waste coming up after 5. We're talking about a recent wave of GOP resignations from Congress with our guest, Chap Rackaway, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Fort Hays State University in Fort Hays, Kansas. And we welcome your questions for him or your reactions to this. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. And we'll get to the phones in just a moment, Professor Rackaway. But let's talk some about Trent Lott. He announced on Monday that he's not going to run again. Some say that this was so he could lobby sooner rather than later. What's up with this?
Well, one of the things that happens with career politicians is that they make so many contacts and they have so much legitimacy among their colleagues that they make fantastic lobbyists. Bob Dole is definitely an example there, and in fact, there's a list as long as your arm of former elected officials who have gone into lobbying. So there's rules that prohibit people from lobbying within 6 months of resigning from Congress. And so this just accelerates Lott's timetable to be able to get a nice lobbying position where he can then go and use his contacts with his former colleagues to lobby on behalf of some issue, some industry, whoever so happens to hire him.
Yeah, we had a caller, I think, who wanted to make that that very point, that there this was not an altruistic decision by Trent Lott.
Retirements are almost never an altruistic decision. It's sort of like if you're a sports fan, I know you're in Big Ten country, be sort of like Joe Paterno retiring from Penn State. They have to drag him out of there, and usually elected officials have that same kind of connection to their seats, unless, of course, they have a better opportunity or they can hear footsteps behind them that a real challenge is coming that might get them to lose.
Yeah, was this, though, a surprise with Trent Lott? Since, I mean, he was used to be the Republican Senate leader, but then he got bumped because he made some controversial remarks about... Who was that again?
Strom Thurmond.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, when he said that America would have been better off had we voted for him in 1948 with the Dixiecrats.
That's right.
And so that caused his own little Don Imus sort of uproar. And so it was somewhat amazing when, after the Republicans lost control of the Senate, that he elevated again to minority leader, but he sort of became the last person standing there. And there's some of that, I think, some residual bitterness or dissatisfaction with the way that situation paired out. And he said, maybe it's time for me to move on from the Senate. And I think also in the theme of not such an altruistic decision, that he had to look at the prospect of becoming majority leader again and said, wow, these are really thin. I don't want to be minority leader any longer. I'm going to hand this off and let somebody else be minority leader for a while, because the way that things are looking now, it's going to be a while, at least a couple more election cycles, before Republicans can even compete to take over majority control of either chamber of Congress.
Yeah, that's so. He did. He became the sixth Senate Republican this year to announce his retirement. The party is saying these are all just individual personal decisions, not some broader discontent. You dispute that?
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't dispute that? You don't think it's because? Well, I mean, I guess broader discontent in that Republicans are saying, "Hey, we're not gonna win back the majority."
In the case of Trent Lott, because he has that leadership position, absolutely. But if you look at the other people who have decided to retire, I certainly don't think you could make the case that Larry Craig is retiring from the Senate due to anything other than his own individual circumstances.
Yeah, that's right.
And then you look at the others who are bailing out. Chuck Hagel was flirting with a presidential run, so he decided to retire. Pete Domenici and Wayne Allard are both getting on seriously in years, and so they're simply retiring for personal reasons. John Warner is in the same boat, and those are all the names that are retiring. So it's certainly not as though there is this this intentional or this wave behind them, other than to say the wave might be that you have this sort of cyclical thing happen in Congress. If you look at 1992 and 1994 as an example of that, you had in those two elections a total of about 78 members of the House retire, most of whom were Democrats who had been there for 15 years or more. So there's sort of a generational replacement that goes on in Congress. And a number of these folks, Allard, Lott, and so on, got swept into office in the so-called Republican Revolution of the early 90s. They've been there for a couple of terms, and now they're deciding that it's time to take another opportunity, deciding to go back home to the district and move on to another phase of their life. But that had nothing to do with politics and just everything to do with the continuing march of time.
Yeah. But that being said, the prospects for Republicans winning seats in the fall is pretty dim.
It looks about as good as me replacing Joe Paterno as Penn State's football coach. It is absolutely dismal right now. The Senate already, the Republicans are in the hole, 55-45. So that would mean they'd have to win at least six seats. Then you add on top of that, the only people who have decided to retire from the Senate are Republicans. There's six of them. If they lose all of them, suddenly, not only are Republicans in the minority, but they're filibuster-proof. They don't even have enough votes to maintain a filibuster. So the great advantage that the minority party has in the Senate that they lack elsewhere is gone. So that looks really bad for Republicans. Now, you could knock me over with a feather if Idaho or Mississippi go Democratic. Mm-hmm. But still, there aren't enough Democrats for them to knock off. You know, Frank Lautenberg is not going to lose in New Jersey. Dick Durbin is not going to lose in Illinois. Tom Harkin is not going to lose in Iowa. Neither is Mark Pryor or Joe Biden. You know, there just aren't enough vulnerable Democrats, even if they had no Republicans retiring, for you to say at this point that there's any likelihood that Republicans are going to take over the Senate.
We'll take caller Ann in Madison. Hi, Ann, you're on the air.
Hi, I think there's more to this than just the fact that the Republicans expect to lose the next presidential election. One, Denny Hastert was accused and is almost certain to have known about the Page scandals that were going on for a long time, and he did nothing about them. So, you know, he hasn't been a popular guy for a long time. But second, a rule was passed in the last Congress that said that before members of Congress who resign or who leave Congress can become lobbyists, they have to wait for 2 years. And that rule, I believe, takes effect on January 1st. So if they want to, you know, just cash in and make big bucks with the right wing, they're going to have to get out of Congress before the end of the year.
Yeah. Well, we talked about that, Chap Rockaway.
Yeah, that's right. The rule is coming starting this January, and that's part of the reason that that Watt and maybe even Hastert decided to go ahead and move on. The Page scandal is a fine point, and Hastert may in fact have known about it. The thing is, in the Illinois suburban Chicago district from which Hastert runs, that really wouldn't have been too much of an issue. It's a solidly Republican district, and Hastert, having strong name recognition and so on, probably still would have skated to reelection. And it, as scandalous as the Mark Foley situation was, it doesn't look as though there was anything illegal per se that Hastert did that would get him impeached from office, would get him removed, or would serve him any jail time. So I don't think, just in terms of the electoral stuff that we're talking about, that would have had much of an impact. The lobbyist rule, that's much more likely to have had an impact.
Yeah. Chap Rockaway, our guest, assistant professor of political science at Fort Hays State University in Fort Hays, Kansas, talking with us about the recent wave of GOP resignations from Congress. 17 House members and 6 senators saying they're not going to run for re-election. The latest coming on Monday night, Republican Congressman Dennis Hastert of Illinois surprised many when he announced he was resigning effective immediately. We'll continue talking about this coming up after this check of the latest news. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Wednesday, November the 28th. We're talking with a political science professor about the recent wave of GOP Congress members announcing their resignations. The latest 2 out of 23 coming this week, with the Senate Minority Whip, Trent Lott, saying he's not going to run again, and Illinois Republican Dennis Hastert, who we knew wouldn't run again, announcing, though, that he's leaving Congress immediately. So apparently a special election or a primary can be held for his seat in February. We're talking about what this wave of resignations means, what it says, if anything, about the state and future of the Republican Party, especially in Congress, and welcoming your reactions and questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. And please include your first name and your community with your email. Will Republicans find themselves deeper in the minority in both the House and the Senate after the 2008 elections? Is 2008 inevitably a year for the Democrats? What do you think? We welcome your calls. Chap Rockaway, our guest, assistant professor of political science at Fort Hays State University in Fort Hays, Kansas. And our next caller is Bill in Green Bay. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I wouldn't look at it as a Republican or a Democratic thing. I would look at it from a different point of view, which are actually two of them. One, a lot of people that you're seeing get out are near retirement age where they can finally draw their pension. And I think when you look at your presidential election candidate, where Hillary Clinton is starting to slip, is her husband said earlier in the year he was going to become president at one time, and then they were going to come back and get Hillary in, which basically says we're tied to the old boy network. And then the second thing that
I'm sorry, what does that have to do with the Republicans leaving Congress?
Pretty much the good old boy network. Anybody tied to the good old boy network, because in today's society, we're changing in our views where pensions are handed out as freely as they used to be. There's not many jobs out there where you're handed a free pension, and people are looking, look, if I don't get a pension, why should we hand out one to everybody else? And Hillary and Bill have where they said, well, my husband, he's in first, and then we planned on getting Hillary in next. So it's not actually a Republican or a Democratic thing.
I still don't see how what that has to do with 23 Republicans announcing they're retiring from Congress. Do you, Chap Rockaway?
Not really. The issue of pensions and so on, and then Hillary Clinton particularly, in fact, it brings up a good point that over the last 30 years, because of a variety of factors, the old idea of presidential coattails, where one presidential candidate, say Hillary Clinton, if she were to win the nomination of the Democratic Party, that she would then contest the general election, and if she would win, she would ride this wave of popularity into office, and she would have what they call coattails, in other words, other Democrats would sweep into office in the House and Senate behind her. That idea has gone away completely. Presidents don't carry coattails in anymore. And so if Republicans are saying, oh, gosh, we're going to get beaten up because Hillary Clinton might win and bring all these Democrats into office, that's not really going to happen. If a Democrat does win, it might look like coattails, like self-fulfilling prophecy, because these Republicans have gotten out, and it's that number of retirements that leads to a big seat shift. That's what happened in 1994. It wasn't an embracing of the contract with America. It wasn't this big change in national mood that happened. It was, there were so many Democrats that retired, it opened up competitive seats, and Republicans then had a chance to win. Same thing in reverse now. If Republicans retiring, it opens up open seats. Democrats may take them over, but they're going to take them over based on local issues, not on anything that's happening at the national level, because congressional seats are still all about local issues. Tip O'Neill was right. All politics for Congress is local.
Yeah. So the 23 Republicans who have announced that they're retiring, 17 House members, 6 senators, is that an unusually high number of retirements in a given year?
No, as a matter of fact, it's fairly consistent with history. The big number of retirements came in 1992 and 1994. In 92, there were 35 incumbents who retired, and there were, if I recall correctly, 47 in 1994. So we're still talking about almost three times the number of people who are retiring right now. But it doesn't mean that we're at the end of this cycle. There could be more people retiring from both chambers over the next couple of months, because there are a lot of states that don't have their primaries until May or June, and so they're not hitting filing deadlines until a bit later, so that number may increase. And if it gets over about 25, gets close to 30, then we're talking about a pretty significant number of retirements.
But as far as Democrats retiring from Congress, we're not seeing nearly, I'm looking through some material here, and I don't see any big retirements.
The only Democrats who are leaving their offices in the House, you know, someone like Mark Udall comes to mind, but he's not retiring. He's running for the Senate.
He's
getting for Wayne Allard's seat. So that district is Northwest Denver and Boulder. That's a safe, solid Democratic lock seat. That one's not shifting seats, so you won't see a seat change there.
Yeah. So Bill's point that might have been on point, he thought that these retirements were happening just because all these guys were retirement age. I mean,
Energy has been there for 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah, but there are certainly probably some Democrats of retirement age who are deciding not to retire this time around.
And they had to have been thinking, wow, we were in power exile for 12 years between the 94 and 06 cycles. Now, being back in the majority, having the opportunity to get things done in committee, maybe take a committee chairmanship, that can really invigorate someone's career. So maybe that's why the Democrats have found a fountain of youth and the Republicans are feeling a bit old right now.
Yeah. You mentioned Tom Udall running for Senate. There are some others, too, in other states. I'm looking here that Senator John Warner, Republican, Virginia, bows out, and former Virginia governor, a Democrat, Mark Warner, decides to run and is the heavy favorite there.
That's absolutely right. There are a couple of states where you could see the Senate even have a greater Democratic advantage. Nebraska is an interesting case because you could see someone like Jeff Fortenberry take a run at Hagel's seat in Nebraska, maybe turn that one over. New Mexico is probably going to stay Republican. Idaho, Mississippi, probably going to stay Republican. But again, what Republicans are thinking about right now, what they really need to be focused on is winning more seats, not just protecting, defending the seats they have, because that's not enough seats for them to take over the majority. So it does look like, especially in the Senate, things are at worst going to hold station for Democrats.
Yeah. We're talking with Chap Rackaway, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Fort Hays State University, about the retirements being announced, the resignations being announced by Republicans in Congress. 23 so far this year, two of them coming this week, with Trent Lott and Dennis Hastert announcing they're stepping down. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We're talking about the broader implications of these resignations and what it might mean in 2008, and welcoming your thoughts and questions about this. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 13 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, November the 28th. Coming up after 7, I'll be hosting my November open line to hear your suggestions for guests and topics that you would like to hear discussed on this program. Coming up this afternoon, by the way, on Talk of the Nation, it's a mega-sized edition of The Political Junkie. Ken Rudin will be the guest talking about the latest on the political scene and on the campaign trail, like Oprah on the campaign trail, and the Republicans' turn to field questions from the YouTube debate, and Mike Huckabee trying to cash in on his growing poll numbers. That's coming up this afternoon. Everything for The Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation after 1 o'clock. We're talking politics right now, too, talking about the GOP exodus, or at least resignations. Republican Congressman Dennis Hastert and Senator Trent Lott are the latest two of 23 who have announced they will not be running for re-election. We're talking about what this means for the GOP and for 2008 and wondering why 23 Republicans are not running for re-election, and welcoming your thoughts and questions. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Gay in Whitewater joins us next. Hi, Gay, you're on the air.
Hi, hi. I think like Humpty Dumpty, these guys didn't fall, they're being pushed. I really imagine that somewhere back there, there were a bunch of pink slips prepared saying, who are the most polarizing, you know, radically conservative guys we have who have bad reps, you know, from Katrina on out, Hastert for years. You know, we need to get rid of them so that when the more moderate or the more polarizing Democrats come in, we can beat them with more moderate people.
And do you think that has anything to do with the Chaprack way? Are they getting pink slips?
I'd love to know who's doing the pushing, because if you look at it from a standpoint of the political parties, so let's just say that it's the chairs of the Republican congressional and senatorial campaign committees. If that's the case, then it's also a strategic blunder from two standpoints. First of all, polarized districts or skewed districts send extreme ideological candidates to Congress. Hastert comes from a very conservative district, so he is a conservative guy. He reflects the people that come from that district. But then when it comes to the party, the National Republican Congressional and Senatorial Committees are now lagging behind their Democratic counterparts for the first time in about 30 years. And so they don't even have the money to put behind any moderate Republican candidates who are out there running, which makes them doubly on the back foot. So, yeah, I can see where it might look like that to the outside observer, but when you actually get into it, the party really doesn't have any influence. They can't give people that push or that golden handshake, is the way a lot of other people like to put it. It just doesn't happen. Yeah. It doesn't happen that way.
A piece yesterday in the Washington Post says, with so many lawmakers, including a large number from competitive states and districts, heading for the exits, it's hard not to point to the GOP's newfound minority status in Washington, the turnover in party leadership, and the perilous political environment heading into 2008 to explain the exodus. You, too, explain the exodus this way?
Well, that certainly gives people more of an incentive to jump rather than pushing them. But, yeah, a lot of the research that I do is on the ways political party national committees funnel money into competitive races. And for a long time, the Republicans really had a leg up on the Democrats. They had more money, first of all, and second of all, they used it more efficiently. They had a better sense of which candidates had a shot, and so they would funnel more money there. So they used more money, and they used it judiciously. But what we have seen is a real flip since Howard Dean ascended to the Democratic National Committee chairmanship. As he brought in new leadership in both of the Democratic committees, they've gotten more aggressive, much better about fundraising and about using that money wisely. Here in Kansas, they helped Nancy Boida knock off Jim Ryan, a numerous-term Republican incumbent, funneling money to her when a lot of people had written her off. Smart decision-making like that by the Democrats and some poor decision-making by the Republicans have made for a situation where a Republican now says, if I'm going to run and I'm going to be challenged, I can't really rely on my party as well as I used to be able to, and so maybe I'd better bow out because I'd rather retire and walk out than lose and be carried out.
Ah, yeah. So anybody, I mean, have we seen the end of this wave of resignations, do you think, or is there speculation that somebody, you know, others are headed toward that exit?
there's really no big names that are being whispered about right now. Watt and Hastert were the two big fish who people knew were sort of heading for the exit. There may be some other minor players. There may be a couple more. A couple of more incumbents. I look at someone like Heather Wilson in New Mexico, who lost a very close race in 2000, or won a very close race, excuse me, in 2006, and she made the side because her Democratic challenger, Martin Heinrich, has $320,000 right now, and she might say, yeah, maybe I'm going to bow out. But none of those big names where you sit back like a Trent Lott and just say, wow, that's big news.
Yeah. Now, Mississippi isn't likely to elect a Democrat as a senator?
Well, Senate elections are almost always toss-ups, so it's certainly possible. Is it likely? Not very. Mississippi has become a fairly solid Republican state over the last 10 years, and it would take an extraordinary Democrat. It would take someone with a lot of money, a lot of charisma, to go ahead and knock him off, and it wouldn't surprise me to see someone like their very popular, very charismatic governor, the former RNC chair, Haley Barbour, decide to run for Lott's seat. And if Barbour decides to run, pretty much it's a Republican lock. It'll be a safe seat, and it'll be a hold for the GOP.
Yeah, and remind us of the other five senators who are not going to run again, and prospects of those states turning.
Sure thing. Well, you've got Mark Udall running for Wayne Allard's seat in Colorado, and that is going to be one that may actually be the battleground Senate race for 2008. I've already put that on my watch list, and I think you're going to be seeing a very expensive, probably fairly negative campaign there. Colorado is a really evenly split state, and that's going to be a very, very competitive seat. Larry Craig is retiring from Idaho. I don't see that being very competitive, though, again, just like Mississippi, it could happen. You get the right Democrat, you get the right money, you get the right message, and that seat is winnable. Chuck Hagel's seat in Nebraska, depending, just like Trent Lott's seat in who decides to run, may be a fairly competitive race, though I'd say that's a hold for the GOP. New Mexico's seat from Pete Domenici could be a very, very competitive race. That one, along with Colorado, I have on my watch list because that one could come right down to the wire. And then John Warner's race, with Mark Warner running, you could see that one. That's probably has the greatest likelihood of switching from Republican to Democrat. That's number one ahead of Colorado in terms of likelihood to switch over now. So that's another
one.
We
covered all of them, have we? Yeah. And what about
And
we probably can't go through all 17 of the in the House, but the ones that are maybe on your watch list.
House races are notoriously uncompetitive, and there are very few, in fact, where I'm looking at these House races and I'm saying, geez, that one is going to be a good one to watch. Normally, there's 30 to 50 races where there's some validity in paying attention. This time, I can't really say that much. You've got a couple seats. You've got Rick Renzi's seat in Arizona. You have Martin Ramstad's in Minnesota, and of course Heather Wilson's in New Mexico. Maybe Ralph Regula's in Ohio, but I'm talking four or five seats right now where it's sussing out to be interesting, competitive, and that's pretty much a sad commentary when 0.1% of seats in the House of Representatives are competitive. But it's still too early with the House. People are just now starting to put their committees together, get fundraising, hiring consultants. So it's a little premature to say anything about the House. Is the only warning that I'd give you. We could be looking at 20, 30 good competitive races if we were to talk again in February or March.
Yeah, and you say that the House races are notoriously uncompetitive, even if it's an open seat, because of what, the boundaries of the district?
Good point, Joy. I'm talking in the aggregate, all 435 seats. Open seats are where all the action is. They're almost always competitive, but they're just a very, very small number. 17 to 20, which doesn't make up even 1% of the U.S. House. That was what made 94 such an opportunity for the Republicans. They had 47 Democrats retire, so that meant you had 10% of the House retiring. That's a lot of open seats, and with their money advantage, they were able to funnel it to the right people. But when you get an opportunity like that, you've got to take it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We have 1 minute to go. I have to ask you to beat Talk of the Nation to the punch. Is Oprah going to help Barack Obama in Iowa?
Well, it becomes this really interesting thing because you have Oprah Winfrey. I don't know if she is the kind of person who inspires a lot of people to vote. My guess is she does, and that might have a strong impact. There might be a lot of women who watch her show who are saying, I'm going to vote for the woman, I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton, and then they watch her show, they see her behind Obama, and at the very least, they start questioning themselves, so they might say, I go from leaning towards Hillary to the straight undecided column. They may go back to Hillary, but they just might as easily decide to switch over to Obama. That might give him the boost, especially in states, Midwestern states like Iowa, where he could use it because he's catching up to Hillary in the polls.
Well,
so there actually could be an Oprah boomlet for Obama.
Well, we'll
and it's always fun to say Oprah boomlet and Obama. That's a good time and probably the best way of all to end the show, don't you think?
It is. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Chap Rackaway, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Fort Hays State University, and more on Oprah on the campaign trail on Talk of the Nation after 1 this afternoon. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.